You're listening to TuneIn Talk, episode 34, interview with Chris Prynoski. Welcome to episode 34 of TuneIn Talk, your rendezvous for animation interviews straight from the animation industry. I am your host, Whitney Grayson. Let's all give me a round of sound. That is such a 90s callback to the Nickelodeon comedy sketch show Roundhouse. Let's make a round of sound. Woo! And it is something I did not like to watch when I used to watch SNICK on Nickelodeon, which was the Nickelodeon equivalent of TGIF, Saturday Night Live, or something else that it was meant to appeal to teens of the 1990s. Me, not really being a teenager in the 1990s, I thought Roundhouse was a very weird show, and I didn't get most of the jokes, but it did have a very cool and catchy theme song. And that is this episode's piece of Nickelodeon trivia, Roundhouse, the Saturday Night Live of Nickelodeon in the 90s. And if you need reminding, I, Whitney Grace, am writing a history of Nickelodeon animation because no one has done it before. And, well, Nicktoons are just plain awesome. Lately, I have been seeing a lot of classic Nicktoons such as Rugrats, Duck, Ren and Stimpy, Hey Arnold, Real Monsters, Rocko's Modern Life, and everything else that I failed to mention in this list has made the resurgence in graphic tees, particularly at Walmart, Target, several kiosk stores in the mall. I believe there's this new one called Box Lunch that I have been seeing at various cities across the U.S. that sells everything from Nicktoons to Disney to anime to everything old school, new school, and everything in between. But I have to wonder, is there really something in between? Because the new school pertains to the future. The old school pertains to retro stuff that is now cool again. But is there a neutral school? A medium school? A now school? Huh. We are continuing on a stream of consciousness brought to you by Ulysses by James Joyce. One of those classics of literature that for some reason I failed to comprehend why it was so good. Ah, James Joyce, you're just nothing but a paperweight to me. So in today's episode of TuneIn Talk, we are going to be talking to a really cool individual, which... Oopsie! This happened several years ago. 2015. Oh my gosh. Not necessarily bad things happened in 2015. It's just time got away from me. And I was also working on my other book as well, which is, you know, Lotta Ronninger Pioneer Film Animation. But I was also working on a graphic novel script for Blood, Feather, and Stone, which is my YA / middle grade graphic novel that has yet to be published. I don't know why, but hey, one day. Right now it is burning on the back burner. One day it's going to evaporate entirely, having been there simmering for, oh gosh, 5-6 years now? Yeah. One day, Blood, Feather, and Stone, you will be published. Now, Titmouse Animation Studio, I know some of you have less than noble thoughts going around in your head at the sight of hearing Titmouse Animation, but actually, let me read you what Titmouse Animation is directly from their website. Titmouse founders Chris and Shannon Pranowski opened a t-shirt company in the year 2000 and named it Titmouse after Chris's favorite northeastern American bird species, but soon restructured the business to focus more on high-quality film and television animation production. The Pranowskis made the courageous business decision for no reason other than the fact that they could do it, and because no one was buying their t-shirts, but television and film studios kept giving them money to make cartoons. So ever since the 2000s and since they quit making t-shirts, Titmouse Animation has been a growing studio that has impressed viewers across the United States and around the world. Titmouse Animation is famous for such shows as... they've done a lot, and some of these are work that they've just done, others are original creations. They have worked on such shows as Avatar Last Airbender. They made the opening sequence for that. As well as Megalus XR, which was the main titles in traditional animation. Oh, they did the main titles for the Osbournes. You might remember that that was a show on MTV back in the early 2000s. Let's see. Then we have, they did something again called Liquid Television for MTV. They did Motor City and Randy Cunningham, Ninth Grade Ninja. They did, apparently they had a pilot called Laser Wolf for Adult Swim, which was a pilot that never quite took off. What I find funny about that is bringing in the more random trivia for you. Laser Wolf was a character in Fiddler on the Roof, which is a Broadway musical as well as an award-winning movie. And it is quite funny and amazing where you're going to see Broadway references and things. Oh, more recently they did the animation on the one season only sitcom called Son of Zorn. If you don't remember that, it was a He-Man slash, I won't say the Brady Bunch, but maybe He-Man meets Modern Family, where an animated character from a He-Man-like island returns to the real world to spend more time with his real-world son, who is half animated, half regular human. It was fun-ish, but I understand why it didn't make a second season, but it was interesting. They worked on Uncle Grandpa, and one of my new favorite TV shows for the younger set is called Hanizuki, Full of Treasures, which is a really cute, shall we say, colorful, glowing, happy world, full of fun and color and rainbows and cute little kawaii things. From Hasbro Studios, if you have not heard of Hanizuki, Full of Treasures, YouTube it. It's also a cute little comic. They're all great. If you have ever seen anything on Netflix, particularly in the animation department, you should check out Big Mouth, which is not a show for the faint or young. And I don't mean young at heart. I literally mean the young. It's kind of... okay, so you have The Simpsons on one level, which made the censors, like, go crazy back in the day. Then came Family Guy. Then came American Dad. And then came a whole bunch of other stuff in between. Oh, yeah, the Ren and Stimpy was in there, too. But because Netflix is not cable television or air TV, they can get away with a lot more. So Big Mouth is an animated TV series without a censor. Yes. It's kind of like, what would happen if the United States made anime? Except it's not anime. And it's all American. Because anything goes. When you don't have to worry about cable censors. Yes. Netflix is like the rebel HBO and Stars. Except it streams. So they've also worked on Goldie and Bear, which is a actually a pretty awesome kid show. Goldie and Bear, it's basically the baby bear and Goldilocks from Goldilocks and the Three Bears. They're friends, and then they go through, you know, trials and tribulations that kids face. But it's really cute and actually very, very creative. I'm also like Masha and Bear. Yes, Masha and Bear. We're from Russia. Yeah, that was a bad Russian accent. But hey, what can you do? Some of their newest things are Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur, Mau Mau, Heroes of Pure Heart. Mau Mau, Heroes of Pure Heart. I'm just going to take a quick look at that, and $10 or nothing, it is about cats? Yep, Mau Mau. Yeah, that's actually kind of cute. Mau Mau. Okay, they're also doing Neo Yokio, Pink Christmas. They're also working on the Epic Tales of Captain Underpants, which is also streaming on DreamWorks. Good for them. Bobcat Goldthwait's Misfits and Monsters. Oh, they also did another pilot called Trap Universe, which didn't seem to take off, according to this. They're also working on Ballmasters 9009 and Tiktone for Adult Swim. And Project Runway All-Stars. And they did a Thrown for a Loop by Betty Boop animation for Project Runway All-Stars. Huh. Thrown for a Loop by Betty Boop. Say that 5 times fast. Thrown for a Loop by Betty Boop. 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 Ha ha. When it comes to feature animation, Titmouse has done a few things on its own. They have done... Whoa! This is pretty interesting. Do you remember that movie Her, which is about a virtual assistant, sort of like Cortana, Alexa, or Google, one of many Google's incarnates, and it gains sentience? And the main character and the digital assistant fall in love, have a relationship, and a lot of stuff happens related to the differences between a physical relationship and a virtual relationship, and the differences. It's quite compelling, and not at all what I expected, but it's fun. Instead of the virtual assistants trying to take over the world and must destroy all humans, they actually get along with the humans. Now, that's really not a spoiler in any way, because if it was a destroy all humans kind of monster thing, it would have been labeled as science fiction horror rather than just science fiction slash romance. It's a pretty fun movie. They worked on Scooby-Doo and Kiss, Rock and Roll Mystery. Who has Scooby-Doo not met? Then they did... They did some work for Team Hot Wheels at Mattel Playground Productions. I must say, my guilty pleasure are Mattel Playground Productions movies, particularly for the Barbie line, as well as the Monster High and Enchanted High. Or no, is that Fairy Tale High? Yeah. There are a lot of high schools, apparently, in this Mattel collected universe. But I think both of those toy lines have come to an end, except for Barbie. Barbie is going to go on until the end of humanity. So as long as Barbie's okay, we're okay. But apparently, they also worked on a featured film called Nerdland. Oh, well, this is pretty cool. The people who starred in this movie are Paul Rudd, Hannibal Buress, Kate Mikuchi, forgive me for pronouncing and butchering your last name. John Ennis, Mike Judge, Ricky Lindholm, Patton Oswalt, and Hannibal Buress. And today's guest, Chris Panofsky, directed it, as well as Andrew Kevin Walker wrote it. But Nerdland. So, looking quickly through the synopsis, it's pretty much a bunch of nerds, a.k.a. me, a.k.a. you, in their trials and tribulations growing up, as well as trying to find fame and So, but it's a different take on it. Nerdland was actually released in 2016 and came on DVD in 2017. That actually, I haven't seen it, but I really am interested in it now. I think around the time of this interview, Chris was actively directing that. So, let's see. Oh! They made another movie called Next Gen for Netflix, and they are currently working on two more animated films, Hanazuki Full of Treasures, which is a featured film, Foxtrotter. I have no idea what it is. The only thing that comes to mind is Foxtrot the comic, which is and was syndicated in newspapers across the United States of America. However, I'm not really sure, but they did make the movie Teen Titans Go! The Movie. Oh, yeah. Teen Titans Go! The Movie was awesome! Oh, Teen Titans Go! And then they also worked on something called Father of the Year. Oh, it's a Happy Madison, which is Adam Sandler's production company, if I am not mistaken. And, yep, Adam Sandler. And they just did some... It looks like they just did some animation services for it. But real claim to fame here. Her, a Scooby-Doo Kiss Rock and Roll Mystery. I mean, it's Scooby-Doo, people. Out of all the Hanna-Barbera characters that the populace has known and loved over the years, Scooby-Doo seems to be the one with any sort of longevity. Particularly because they just team up with anyone who... says, hey, let's go hang out with Scooby-Doo and the Mystery Ink Gang. I am probably going to anger a few people by saying this, but I am actually a Scrappy-Doo fan. And some of you are like, wait, what, you actually like Scrappy-Doo, that annoying puppy who is Scooby-Doo's nephew? And I'm like, yes. Why, Whitney, why? Well, Scrappy-Doo was the only one who actually had any logic to him and was getting anything done. If you think about it, he was never afraid to ambush the villain or the ghost or whatever it was. And if they had just given him, he could have run everyone over with the Mystery Ink trunk. And hey, we wouldn't have had those half-hour adventures. Now, would we have? I guess this is a bad time to also say the 13 Ghosts of Scooby-Doo. I actually enjoyed that series. But hey, I guess I'm not the best taste when it comes to Hanna-Barbera. Oh. So today's interview with Chris Prynoski is going to be a little outdated, but it's going to be good because it comes straight from the owner and founder of Titmouse Animation, which I bet we're going to hear from for the next few years, if not decades. So without further ado, here's the interview. Sir, introduce yourself and claim your name to fame in the animation industry.
Hey, how's it going? This is Chris P. from Titmouse. Thanks a lot for having me on.
Cool. So, Chris, tell me a little bit about what Titmouse is, because when I hear the word Titmouse, I think of some sort of little rodent, but I know it's actually a bird, but you guys don't work with any sort of animals at all, unless they're probably animated. So, tell us a little bit about your studio and what you guys do.
Well, we're an animation studio, and we make a lot of cartoons for TV and some movies and some video games, commercials, whatever. Whenever people need cartoons made, we'll make them. We're primarily, you know, our main studio is in L.A., but we have a studio in New York and Vancouver, so we do kind of, actually, our Vancouver studio is getting bigger and bigger. So, do a lot of stuff for Adult Swim, but a lot of kids' stuff, too. Shows that we do include Venture Brothers, Metalocalypse, Super Jail, Black Dynamite, China, Illinois. We're doing a new one for Adult Swim called TV Sucks. Have one on Comedy Central now called Moonbeam City. We do Turbo for Netflix, Home for Netflix and DreamWorks, Breadwinners for Nickelodeon, doing a couple movies now, which we're going to announce soon. If anybody's going to New York Comic Con, we'll announce some of that at that point. So I don't know when this podcast goes on, if it's before or after New York Comic Con, but if it's before, come to our panel at New York Comic Con. Is that enough?
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Enough? It'll probably air after New York Comic Con, but I'm going to New York Comic Con.
Well, then you can tell everybody what we announced at New York Comic Con.
Certainly. So you guys have a very interesting start when it comes to animation, because didn't you start working in the apparel business first?
Well, kind of. Basically, you know, I mean, I always worked in animation. Like, I graduated in the mid-90s from art school, from the School of Visual Arts, and started working on shows like Beavis and Butthead and Daria and MTV, and, you know, did work, you know, as a cartoon director for a few years. And in the early 2000s, when there was this kind of like internet boom, I was like, oh, I'm going to start a side business of selling t-shirts on the internet. And that's what Titmouse was. I was like, I'll call it Titmouse, a stupid word, funny sounded name, memorable. Not really a name that I would have considered for an animation studio. And realized, like, it was a lot of work back then. Like, didn't have these pre-built stores and ways to fulfill like they do now. You kind of had to figure out how to print stuff. And basically, designing the t-shirts was fun and wearing them was fun. And I found everything else to be, like, a really hard job. So although we sold a certain amount, we didn't really, really make a big splash with the t-shirts. But I kept getting freelance animation work. So what ended up happening is we were, you know, at first I would just pay my friends to help me out, like, with personal checks and stuff. But then once you start doing that a lot for tax reasons, it's better to run stuff through a business. And we did a job for a movie studio for a sequence in a movie. And they're like, what's your production company? I was like, I don't have a production company. I'm just a dude. And they're like, we can't hire a dude. You need like production insurance. And like, this needs to be real. We're a real movie studio. So I was like, I have this company, Titmouse. And I guess we had enough, you know, we had a bank account and the paperwork checked out. So that was the first one that we ran through Titmouse. And then we're like, oh, this is way better for taxes and stuff. So then it just kind of ended up becoming the animation studio. So there was never a plan to start an animation studio. It just kind of happened.
What was that first freelance job you got that kind of made you decide to turn this into an animation studio?
Oh, so it was a movie that, and people are very divided about this movie. Some people love it. It's kind of a cult movie, and some people absolutely hate it. It's a movie called Freddy Got Fingered. And it was a Tom Green movie where he plays an animator. And if you watch the movie, there's a sequence that's animated in the middle that I directed. And I actually drew all the drawings that Tom Green, all the props that he is meant to be drawing in the movie are my drawings. And his dad, who's played by Rip Torn, jams one of those drawings up his butt. So I could say that as a career highlight, that Rip Torn jammed one of my drawings up his butt.
Oh, wow, the Tom Green. I have never seen that movie, but I remember the Tom Green show. And
yeah,
it was funny and random, but a flash in the pan, kind of like
Tom. Yeah, exactly.
Kind of like Tom Green, but animation is here to stay. So, did you work with Yvette Kaplan over on Beavis and Butthead?
I did. I lived in her basement.
You're joking!
Nope. I actually did.
That's really funny. She's actually going to be a guest on the show in November, so...
Right on. Ask her about me living in her basement.
Well, I'm sure you were a wonderful house guest.
Yeah.
What I find really...
It was actually a full like apartment, so it wasn't quite her basement. It was like a real apartment. It just happened to be like kind of half. She had a Brooklyn brownstone, and it was one of those like like you had to walk down. It wasn't quite underground. It was like halfway underground. Like you walk down and, you know, like a little, like half flight of stairs into it. It's a really nice apartment, actually. So basement doesn't really do it justice. But I think it's funnier to say I lived in her basement.
No, I think that's hilarious, too, because I don't know. You've heard of Robert Kirkman, the guy behind The Walking Dead, right?
Yeah, of course.
I do some work in the comic book industry as well as a reviewer and an interviewer, and I've met some people who have worked with Robert Kirkman, and I've talked to this one guy recently, and he goes, Robert Kirkman lived in my basement and something like this for a while before he got really famous. So it's really funny how connected people are.
Yeah, it's true. Just animation and comics are both pretty small industries.
I'm beginning to learn that because I've just seen so many connections with these guests I interview, and it's just amazing who knows who and who does what. So, how did you guys start working on Adult Swim?
Well, it was pretty much a connection from my MTV days because, you know, did a lot of work at MTV, you know, worked on various projects there, you know, The Head, Beavis and Butthead, Daria. I had a show on there called Downtown that just went one season. Worked on a bunch of, like, short-form stuff, station IDs and whatever. And, you know, a couple people that I worked with there ended up going to, when I moved out to L.A., a couple of those folks ended up going down to Adult Swim. So I knew people who were working there. And once Adult Swim kind of went beyond, you know, at first they were just doing stuff in Atlanta, you know, kind of based on the, like, almost like parodies of the classic, like, Hanna-Barbera properties, you know, Space Ghost and C-Lab and BRAC and stuff like that. And Aqua Teen, I guess, was, you know, the first kind of, like, original show. They started to think about expanding and doing more shows for a proper Adult Swim block. And, you know, I think I was just on their radar as a somebody who would be a good person to work with. So the first project we did with them was Metalocalypse, and I knew all the people who were involved in that, working with them on separate jobs. I knew Brendan Small from directing a pilot of his at Sci-Fi Channel that never went anywhere. I knew Tommy from being in a writer's room for an MTV show that we worked on. And I knew John Schnepp just from around because he's a good, talented weirdo. So it seemed like a good fit because they were like, do you want to do Metalocalypse? Or there's a couple other things we could have done. I think Boondocks or Minority Team were two other things. And I was like, well, Metalocalypse makes sense. Also, Metalocalypse, they need a lot of help. They didn't have an art style. So we wanted to develop that. And that was fun to be able to build that show from the ground up.
Yeah, I admit I've only seen a few clips of Metalocalypse, but I found the animation.
You got it.
Yeah, well, thank you. I was always intrigued by the animation choice because it looked very cheaply done and kind of like you know, some of the music videos in the 90s and stuff. But I always liked how they move. It was up and down and never like real movements.
Yeah, well, you know, the Adult Swim budgets are, you know, pretty challenging, especially back then. They've gotten a little bit better, but, you know, so we had to figure out how to get, you know, the most comedy on the screen. We kind of invested in, like, backgrounds and settings because that's, you know, we couldn't really do super fancy animation, especially in the first season. It got better as it went along, but, yeah, the first season is pretty simple animation.
I found it hilarious, because that told me it was a comedy, not to take anything they say seriously.
Yeah.
So, I have to admit, I'm a huge Venture Brothers fan. And
cool.
One of the reasons I know that it takes so long between seasons is because of the animation style you chose, rather than doing it completely in computers, you chose to do traditional animation. What was the choice behind that?
Well, I think that's budgetary too. You know, it's like sending, shipping stuff over to Korea. You know, it's like an overseas workforce. you know, it just ends up, the labor ends up being cheaper. So, you know, it also takes longer. Also, you know, Chris and Doc, you know, Jackson Public and Doc Hammer, you know, they're the guys that write every script. So, you know, there's not a big writing team. So that process takes longer than it would on a show with like a writer's room as well. So there's, you know, a lot of work that goes into that on the front end as well. And we're working on more, you know, the proper season 6 has been announced. It's going to premiere on February 7th. And then, I don't think I'm allowed to talk about the future, but there's, you know, expect more to come in the future at some point after 6.
Yeah, sorry about that in the background. My roommate just came home, so.
Oh, that's fine.
That's my production team of 4 right canines. So, anyway, Titmouse, what I am astonished by whenever I talk to one of these more independent studios is just by the sheer amount of work I know from you, but I don't know it's by you. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
So
what, yeah, we work on a lot of cartoons.
And what I find totally amazing is how many pots you guys have your hands in. And because you're not solely, you know, just cartoon animation, you also do children's entertainment, commercials, and anyone else who needs something done well. What are some of the difficulties in having your hands in so many using animation for so many types of projects?
Well, I mean, controlling the quality, you want to make sure that you keep making stuff that's good. So that's something that we always try to be on top of. Like, we aren't really good at making money yet. We haven't, like, figured that angle out. But, you know, as long as we can continue to do good work, you know, we figure we'll continue to get more jobs, and that philosophy's worked out so far. So I think a lot of it, the difficulties are just making sure that we can deliver what we promise, you know, because when we get spread thin, you know, it's always a challenge to make sure that we don't, you know, we don't under deliver anything. So that's probably the biggest challenging thing, is like, you know, keeping all these plates spinning and keeping them from, you know, turn into something that's either, you know, depending on what the focus is of the show, it's either like trying to deliver, you know, something that looks good or something that's got really funny timing, or sometimes we could do both, you know, something that's funny and really beautiful. We try to dig into what the most important aspect of each show is and keep that in mind. Hopefully that answered your question.
No, I think it did. I actually, that leads into my next question is of, you guys do the best that you possibly can with all of your talents. What do you think makes Titmouse stand out from other animation studios, or what do you think you specialize in the most that makes you stand out? Like, your specialty.
I don't know. I think one of the reasons, you know, we're artist run rather than producer run. You know, there's a lot of studios that have, you know, kind of been founded by producers, and they do fine work too, but they have, you know, a little bit of a different focus, whereas we're, you know, kind of first and foremost thinking about the creative. I think there's a tone, you know, we don't really have a so-called house style as an art style, but we do have like kind of a house sensibility that I think we like to inject in our stuff. That's like a little bit, you can kind of feel our hand in the cartoons, even if it's a kid's cartoon. Generally, they're a little bit, there's something for an adult in our kids' cartoons. You know, if you watch Randy Cunningham or Breadwinners or Motor City, or, you know, even some of the pilots that we're doing now, you can feel that, you know, that it's not purely for kids, like not only for kids, I should say.
Mm-hmm. Now,
One of the things I always like to ask people who dip in both children's entertainment and shows meant for adults, do you ever find that there's any sort of difficulty crossing over from one to the other?
Yes and no. I mean, I think it's one of those catch-22 situations where you kind of have to do it for people to know that you can do it. So getting your first chance at it is sometimes tough. I was lucky, you know, because the first, like, real kids property we did was Motor City, which is a show that I created and pitched to Disney. So they were going to use our studio because we sold them. So then once we delivered on that, it was way easier to do more kid shows. I think it probably would have been harder to get a work for hire kid show, having only done adult stuff or primarily done adult stuff beforehand. So I think in general, it might be tough to cross over as a studio, at least, because the more work you do of a certain kind, the more of that work you get. Like, I know some friends who have independent studios, and, you know, if you do, like, primarily, you know, preschool work, then you're going to get more preschool work, and it's tough to get, you know, adult cartoons, so on and so forth. So I know people do struggle with that. We've been lucky, though.
What, now, you started work in the 90s when it comes to animation, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What drove you to become an animator? I mean, was there a singular instant that you caught the animation bug, or was it a progression?
Yeah, I think I had, you know, I always liked drawing. I was really big on drawing as a kid. I mean, I think a lot of animation folks have the same story, and, I was, you know, always loved cartoons. And then when I was in high school, you know, I'd mess around with my friends and we'd make a lot of, like, stupid, like, movies, you know, like shoot videos and make, like, parodies and stuff. And then when I was in high school, I kind of had the revelation of, like, hey, maybe I could do something that, like, mixes these two interests together, you know, like, kind of filmmaking and drawing. And that's animation. So I started doing that, and I dug it, and I still dig it.
Well, how can you not dig animation? I'm just speaking very candidly, because it's freaking awesome. I mean, you can basically do in animation what you can never do in live action.
It's true.
Yep.
Even a lot of live action films these days are pretty much animated films. You know, if you look at a lot of the big action films, there's just as much animation in those as live action. They just hide it well.
Yeah, I wonder what the threshold will be, or when the line will be crossed, when all movies will be considered animated to a point or something like that, you know. I mean, I think Avatar was the one that really set it off, and
yeah.
James Cameron, you are always pushing the limit when it comes to some sort of cinematic thing, whatever. So, what about you? Are you a traditional animation guy or a CGI kind of guy?
You know, it depends. I like anything that's good and entertaining and, you know, where you can... I like seeing the artist's hand. We still do mostly 2D animation. We do some 3D stuff, but, you know, for the most part, for our, like, series work, we mostly limit the CG stuff to, like, vehicles or sets or, you know, maybe some robots or something, but we have done some, like, character work, like, I don't know if you saw the movie Her, the Spike Jonze movie, but we did a sequence in that where the main character's playing a video game, and there's a little character with a big head who's kind of cursing and stuff, and that was fun to do, a little CG sequence like that, and we'll do it from time to time. So I think I enjoy a lot of CG work. We just don't do it as much because we don't have a big CG team in-house. So I guess the answer is I like all of it.
what other, so you've done some small sequences in movies. You've already mentioned, Freddy Got Fingered, and then you just mentioned that sequence in Her. I haven't seen that movie yet, but I've heard it was really good. Now I really want to see it because of your stuff in there.
Right on.
So, when you're making these small little animation segments for movies, is it usually just some studio calls up saying, hey, we need a specially made commercial to insert into a movie, or we need someone to make a fake video game, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, generally it's a call from somebody, you know, because we're on, I think, you know, a lot of people's lists of, you know, hey, this is an animation studio, they could do something like that. So, yeah, we'll get an email or a call for a bid, and, you know, we kind of talk to the person, and if they seem like we're a good fit, and, you know, we can hit their schedule and budget, then we'll do the job.
Do those projects usually take maybe just a couple weeks or maybe even less than a couple months to do? So are those considered, like, quick jobs?
It depends, you know. Sometimes, like, commercials will have short schedules. I mean, a couple months is probably the shortest schedule that we'll do. You know, we do a lot of sequences in live-action things. You know, we're working on a project for the Nat Geo Network that's primarily a live-action show that has, like, a lot of animation in it, like 5 or 6 minutes of animation per episode. So, but that has a pretty quick turnaround. There's another series we're doing for Disney called Kirby Buckets that's a live-action show with animation. We do all the animation in it, and that's, like, I think there might be 2 or 3 minutes of animation per episode that we do, and that's got a pretty quick turnaround. Generally, the stuff that has to do with live action has a quicker turnaround because live action in general has a quicker turnaround. Schedules aren't built for, you know, an animated series that takes longer to produce.
On the same thread, a lot of weird stuff comes out of Hollywood's creative mind or collective consciousness, whatever you want to call it. Have you ever been given an assignment that was so weird you keep scratching your head and laughing over it to this day?
Trying to think. I'm pretty open to weird. I'm trying to think of anything that's so weird that not a lot phases us at this point. Because we've done so many weird projects. I'm trying to think of anything that's had us scratching our head. We're pretty open to anything. I don't think anything's, like, thrown us for a loop yet. Not that I can remember, at least.
Okay, let me rephrase that. How about something so funny that you just couldn't stop laughing for a good amount of time?
I mean, when we first started doing Metalocalypse, I was real happy because that show, like, you could tell it was going to work. Like, you get into this zone where it's like, oh, this show's going to be good. Like, when you get in the booth and you get the actors in there and they start improvising, and it's like, oh, yeah, these characters are really, really working together. So that was a good one. I think, you know, the first couple episodes of Metalocalypse, I knew, I was like, all right, this feels right. This feels like this show is gonna come together. So that was a good one for laughing. But we laugh a lot all the time. I mean, it's a pretty stupid, fun environment. So we're always cracking ourselves up over stupid stuff.
Now you have me starting to laugh just thinking about that. So what is in the future for Titmouse Animation?
Well, we're doing a lot of movie stuff now. Some of it hasn't been announced, so we're, you know, producing an independent movie right now that I'm directing that we're going to announce at New York Comic Con, so by the time this is on, we will have heard about it. And we've got a couple more on deck after that. We're also doing pre-production for a few movies that I think have not yet been announced, so those will probably be announced next year. Those are CG movies. The one movie that I'm directing is a 2D movie, but the ones that we're doing pre-production on our CG movies. Another thing that we're getting into that I think is going to be a big part of our business next year is virtual reality. I think there's a lot of crossover between animation and VR stuff right now. So we're developing some like weirdo virtual reality stuff right now. So that'll be in our future.
Is virtual reality only on the Oculus, or are there other devices that you can use that simulate virtual reality?
There's a lot right now, and, you know, there's going to be a lot in 2016. You know, the Oculus is definitely getting a lot of attention. There's the Vive, which is Valve and HTC's product, which I really like. There's Gear VR, which is Samsung's, like, kind of portable one that works with, like, certain Samsung cell phones. There's a Morpheus, which is going to be the PlayStation one that will come out. It'll be compatible with your PlayStation. There's the Microsoft's, I forget, they're calling it HoloLens, maybe. That one is going to be also AR, which is the augmented reality, so you can see, like, little dudes running around in your living room or something. And Magic Leap is a company that's working on AR like that, too. I think there's going to be so many that we'll see who ends up, you know, I don't think they can all have an equal market share. I think probably one of them will become the dominant virtual reality machine, and then we'll see how it goes. So there's going to be a lot. Next year, there's going to be a lot of choices. I think by, like, the end of 2016, they'll all be out, and they'll all have stuff that you can get. So next year is going to be the year.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of that trend, so that's going to be something very interesting to follow. But it makes me wonder, do you think eventually there might be a fully animated movie released where it takes place where, like, the person has to wear a virtual reality device and they're actually a character, or they experience the movie via that end?
I think that's very likely. Yeah. I think that is very likely, especially because last week Netflix announced that they're going to offer virtual reality content on Netflix and have a special app that you can use with this Gear VR, the Samsung, where you can watch VR content through your Netflix subscription. So I think that's incredibly likely.
Maybe Titmouse would be the one of the people to make one of the first. Yeah, that's what you guys should do. You should make the first virtual reality movie.
Yeah, well, we might just do that. Let's see what next year brings.
Ooh, hint, hint. Maybe that is what he is hinting at, dear readers. Listeners, we'll just have to figure out after the New York Comic Con, man. Hey, and if you do that, I'll write a book about you.
Awesome.
So, we're nearing the end of our interview, Chris. But I just have one more question to ask you, and it's one I've asked of everyone, including Yvette Kaplan. So, are you ready for it?
I guess.
You guess? You should be more excited, because it's like the question to end all questions.
All right. I don't know what it is yet. Okay, I'm ready.
All right. Do you have anything to declare?
Declare?
Uh-huh.
Well, I didn't declare. Man, I don't know. that sounds like I'm going through customs, and I have to tell people that I brought, like, fruits and vegetables into the country, or I handled slugs, or I went to a farm. do I have anything to declare? I don't know. No, I guess I don't have anything to declare.
Well, that is a declaration on its own. So that works for me. And you know what? You could have just imagined you're going through a virtual reality customs office and You had a suitcase that was a black hole, and it just, you kept pulling things out like the TARDIS. I don't know. I'm just I'm just pulling things off the top of my head at this point to make you laugh.
Right on.
All right. Chris, thank you so much for appearing on the, for allowing me to interview you.
All right. Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome.
I hope you enjoyed that interview with Chris Pranowski. Thank you again, Chris, for coming on the show, and I hope to have you on again in the future to speak about new developments and new projects that are happening over at Titmouse Animation. And, oh, I don't know what they will be, but I hope Titmouse Animation continues to be successful from here until, I don't know, 50 years in the future. What surprises and amazes me about Titmouse Animation is that it is, well, when you compare it to other studios such as Warner Brothers Animation, Walt Disney Animation, it has found reasonable and ultimately genuine success. Now, some of you might be saying, Whitney, why does that surprise you so much? I mean, the animation industry is blossoming and burgeoning within these continental United States. Sorry, Alaska and Hawaii. Alaska, you're not really going to have an animation studio, but if you do, I apologize, but it's really cold up there, and I don't think a lot of animators want to journey that far. However, Hawaii? Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if you have an animation studio opening up there in the future, unless global warming puts you underwater, but that's another issue. Animation studios, you heard about them opening a lot back in the early days of animation, particularly the 20th century. And from and after the golden age of Walt Disney Animation, as well as Warner Brothers and more, the market was dominated by only a few studios. One in particular comes to mind, Hanna-Barbera, Funimation. I talked a little bit about those in previous episodes. But from there, it was really just small studios that only lasted at most maybe a decade, 15. But Titmouse Animation has been around for almost 20 years, and that's good. A lot of studios just open for a small time to open a particular project because it has to do with taxes and liability, yada, yada, yada. So it's just easier to open a company for a short period of time, finish the project, close it out, and then move on to the next one. However, to get a successful studio up and going, continue to receive clients, to make feature films such as Nerdland and Hanazuki, this new one that's for Hasbro Animation, holy gee whiz. And to have new clients like Netflix and continue to have them come back, holy wow! But I hope to continue to see new animation studios because the market is dominated. You have DreamWorks Animation, you have Warner Brothers Animation. Now, the Warner Brothers, they are mostly occupied with the DC animated universe. And they make wonderful DC movies based off Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, Green Lantern. And I have a copy of the DC Universe Encyclopedia, so I can just keep going on and read the entire thing for the next 6 hours. However, I'm not going to do that. Prior to the creation of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, Warner Brothers Animation was really the only one, when it came to superheroes, experimenting and genuinely creating a decent product for the superhero genre. Now, of course, they had all those cartoons on TV that were part of the DC animated universe, but since then they have made standalone movies, other cartoon TV series, Young Justice comes to mind, as well as Teen Titans Go. And I'm surprised they didn't make the Teen Titans Go movie. Okay, so what I'm getting at here is Titmouse Animation, they did a little bit of work on the Teen Titans Go movie. However, it was made in tandem with Warner Brothers Animation and DC Entertainment. Okay, that's moving back, but back to Warner Brothers Animation. Superhero movies, as you know, they get a really, particularly the live-action ones in the 1980s, 1990s, and the early 2000s, with many exceptions, but a lot of them just really stank. And we're talking Rotten Eggs, Skunk. It's because they were handing these wonderful characters with an established canon to directors and people who weren't necessarily fans. The people over at Warner Brothers Animation, as well as DC Entertainment, they are fans. They respect the superhero genre, as well as so much that they can do it seriously, as well as parody and make fun of it. Because they are fans. And when you hand something over to fans who love something, it works. Case in point, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, particularly Guardians of the Galaxy. Oh, those Gunn brothers, they certainly know how to make a great film. So, moving beyond Titmouse Animation and superhero movies, that rounds us up with another episode of Tune In Talk. I am your host, Whitney Grace. And now, if you will excuse me, I am going to go take a long, long nap. Because as you are listening to this, I have just survived the New York Comic Con. San Diego Comic Con has its ups and downs, but at least they have a lot more bathrooms. New York City Comic Con? No. You have to buy something at another place several blocks down in order to use the restroom. Or stand in line 30 to 40 minutes. Or find the hidden bathroom in the journalism reporter / press lounge. I don't have a press badge this year. I'll catch you next time, everyone.